Hi, I'm Reverend Carol Saunders, host of the Spiritual Forum. I'm here with a lot of interesting people who are consciously walking the spiritual path, experiencing and expressing the divine in unique ways and through unique lenses. Everyone here has wisdom to share and an interesting story to tell, all to inspire you on your spiritual path. Welcome to the Forum. Welcome, everyone, to the Spiritual Forum. I'm so glad you're here. I am in part two with Dr. Will Tuttle. We had a fascinating conversation, and I just want to go a little bit deeper into how do we liberate our minds, how do we awaken, and talk about some of the dark institutions that are running rampant in our lives, because I think it's really important to see what is happening clearly so that we can do something about it. So just as a reminder, Dr. Will Tuttle, I've got his book here. He doesn't have a copy himself yet. It's called Food for Freedom, and it is available. All the links will be shown below so that you can get a copy for yourself. So welcome back, Will.
Thank you so much, Reverend Carol. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening.
Yeah, I think that this book and the conversation we're having is so important because the connections that you encourage people to make are their hard connections. And people are so hardwired. We've been so conditioned. They're so hardwired to not see this. But these are essential connections to make so that we can truly create the world that we envision, where we are free, where we are healthy, where we are creative, jubilant beings and living out our own purpose and allowing all others to do as well. You know, people talk about creating heaven on earth or creating a beautiful world. And this one thing that is permeating every institution, every aspect of our life is the one thing that people are so resistant to because they haven't made that connection. So I just want to go a little deeper in this session to kind of help people see how can we liberate our minds from this materialism that we've been born into, which is kind of like the slave that was born into slavery.
Right. Well, thank you. And the thing is, what you're talking about, heaven on earth and how we can create a more just and healthy and free and spiritual world that really reflects our true nature. The main obstacle to that is animal agriculture, and not just animal agriculture in the sense of eating meat, dairy, and eggs, and what that does to the environment, how wasteful it is, how it causes so much pollution, how it causes starvation, because most of the food we're growing, we're feeding to animals while people go hungry. Starvation leads to conflict and war. You know, all that in the outer world makes people kind of sick, diabetes and obesity and heart disease and all this stuff. But more importantly, I think animal agriculture harms the internal landscape of our own consciousness in a way that we really don't have the capacity to solve our problems anymore because we reduce our capacity to make connections. We talked about that in the last session, that we're eating the mentality of disconnectedness, of might makes right, of materialism, of the suppression of the sacred feminine dimension of consciousness and spirituality so that we can inflict pain and suffering on other beings who have interests that are as important to them as our interests are to us. And this is not just a little side kind of activity. This is the major thing we're doing on planet Earth. There's no larger scale operation than animal agriculture. We're basically just, we've completely fished the oceans. So there's no fish left. I mean, practically all the fisheries are collapsing. Rainforests are being cut down at 4 or 5 acres, you know, every second to grow soybeans to feed to imprisoned animals. So you go into any structure, you'll see the flesh and secretions of animals in there somewhere, in the refrigerator somewhere, and we're eating. So this is huge. This is the biggest thing we're doing. And yet it's very strange how we don't seem to think that it has any impact on what's actually happening. The violence towards these animals and the wastefulness, grotesque wastefulness, and disrespect of nature and of other life forms that this requires of us, we think that that somehow magically just doesn't matter, that it disappears, it dissolves. And we don't realize that how big it actually is, I think, because there's two main reasons. One is that the forces that control the media, they get wealthy off of all this. So they don't really want us to think about it. That's one force. The other force is the people themselves don't want to hear about it either, right? The average person, if I say, would you like to know where your bacon came from, you know, how the animal was treated? No, no, I don't want to know. I want to enjoy my bacon. Don't tell me, right? We would rather not know. So it's understandable. We like to think of ourselves as good, loving, kind people. We just like to have a steak and milkshake and eggnog and so forth. And we don't like to think about the consequences of our actions. But the spiritual teachings all agree on one thing, which is actions have consequences. Whatever we do, we will face the consequences. That is absolutely the foundational teaching in all spiritual traditions. Mm-hmm, whatever, mm-hmm. Paul says it very clearly, God is not mocked. Whatever you sow, so shall you reap. So we need to really embrace this teaching because it's a beautiful teaching of liberation. That means if we treat others with kindness and respect, we can live in a beautiful world. It's the law. It's like gravity. I mean, you can't, this is it. We can use that law to bring us into tremendous joy and healing and abundance. Or we can use that law to complete misery and violence and disease and death and war and slavery and destruction. And animal agriculture is all of that. It's unnecessary. There's no nutrients that we need in animal foods. I've been a vegan since 1980, 44 years now. My wife also, and millions of people are long-term vegans. I know you are also. So we don't need to do this. That's the beautiful thing. We're raised in a society where we're taught that we need to. So I remember when I was in Switzerland a number of years ago, and I was watching a mother duck, and she was with her little ducklings. And I realized that what was going on was she was showing her little ducklings, eat this, don't eat this, eat this, don't eat this. You know, it's the most important teaching across all species, from the parents to the offspring, is food. And so I understand, and I'm sure you understand, Carol, when we talk about changing food, people just don't want to hear about it because at the very deep primal level, we should never question our parents' food. We should never question the tribe's food. We're very tribal also. If I was living in a small tribe of people and I said, well, I'm not going to eat your food anymore. It doesn't mm-hmm. like, okay, then go off and die by yourself. You know, we have to, you know. So when we say we're going to change our food, even now in our society where we're more or less autonomous individuals at a very deep level, it's like you're going against the tribe. You're going against your mother and your father. I mean, don't do it. No, 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 no. You know, that's really the number one taboo. Is to change your food, to eat something else. And yet, if we look with our rational mind, if we look with our empathetic heart, if we look with our spiritual intuition, we can see that eating animal-based foods is completely anti-rational. It causes disease. It causes misery. It's totally wasteful. It's completely unnecessary. And if we look with our empathy, we can see, gosh, these animals are suffering. I don't want to cause that suffering. It's not necessary. If we look with our spiritual intuition, we see, wow, how can I awaken spiritually and really heal and be a force for joy and freedom when I'm just causing misery and violence all the time? It goes completely against every capacity that we have, but we still do it. Yeah, so that's the tribute to the tremendous power of this conditioning. But the good news is there's different stages. Should I go into those stages or did you?
I want you to go into stages, but first I want to reflect on a couple of things because I think that you walk through some of the environmental disasters that animal agriculture is, and yet I'm going to go into an area I wasn't planning to go into, but and yet it's certainly not on the agenda of improvement when it comes to, you know, the United Nations and the climate people and all of it. So that's one thing I want to talk about. And another thing I want to talk about is there is this other thing going on in the world where, like, there's, I think it's the World Economic Forum that is saying, you know, we need to get away from meat. We need to eat bugs and other kinds of things. So I wanted to ask you about that movement as well. So the fact that it's not being talked about as a major environmental polluter, and then the fact that it kind of is being talked about by these other people over here saying, we need to take your meat away from you, which I think causes the freedom movement people to say, I want to have it. I want to keep it. I want to keep it.
Right. Well, I think that's a good question. And it's basically, I think the underlying idea is that the people who are really controlling the narratives, the plutocrats, it's basically 0.001% of the human population has so much wealth. They control the narratives, the United Nations and the governments, the universities and the corporations and the media and the medical establishment, all that. And they want us to have chronic illness. That's really the best thing. And with chronic illness, you have people that are pretty easy to control. They don't have enough time to or energy to really rebel or question things. They're just trying to survive. And so you want to maximize the amount of poisons that you're inflicting on those people through food, through water, through medications, through sprays, you know, all kinds of different ways of doing that. And so that's happening. There's over 90,000 different human-made chemicals that were never here until humans started monkeying around with chemistry. And many of these are really toxic. And so that's increasing. As we can see, the cancer rates are skyrocketing, all these chronic disease rates. When I was a kid, the chronic disease rate was like 5% of the population. Now it's up to 65% have some kind of chronic illness, so that they're taking drugs on for the rest of their life for something that they have. I mean, that's a huge loss of freedom. It's a huge loss of money and power, and a huge gain for these forces that are making not only money, but what's even more important than money is control. They're controlling people, because when people are unhealthy, they're easy to control. And what you're talking about with taking away people's right to grow food or their ability to grow food, even meat or plant-based foods, I think there's this whole idea of plant-based being promoted, but the plant-based foods that are being promoted by these large-scale corporations are coming out of factories. They're very highly processed plant-based foods. That's why I joke, I call it plant-based. Plant means a factory. So they come out of a factory. That's what they call plant-based. But they're genetically engineered, typically. They have lots of preservatives and chemicals and additives, and they're not organic. And so when people make the mistake of thinking, well, I care about animals, I'm going to go plant-based, and they start buying you know, Impossible Burgers and fake chicken and cheese and ice cream and all this stuff, which has lots of chemicals, lots of saturated fat that's added in and other things that are added in to make it more like the real things, supposedly. Then after 4 or 5 months, they say, oh man, I tried going plant-based. I really feel terrible. I'm going to give that up. Now that's what they want. They want people to hate veganism, really. Because what veganism really is eating in harmony with nature. And it's whole organic plant-based foods. I think basically this whole organic plant-based foods, that is a fantastic foundation for health. You know, that's what it always used to be. When I went vegan way back in the 80s, before all these factory foods, then you just ate rice and vegetables and fruits. That's what we ate. It was great. You know, we were healthy. But now there's this introduction of these toxic plant-based foods. And so now veganism is being equated with toxic foods. And people who care about health think, oh, you vegans are eating a bunch of factory produced food, frankenfoods. And then they're even talking about lab-grown meat, which is really crazy. Why are you going to grow meat in a laboratory? Like they're using pharmaceutical factories to make meat out of drugs and out of horrific things, out of fetal bovine serum, which comes out of the hearts of aborted cow fetuses that they kill on dairies. I mean, it's really just diabolical. And they're equating all that with vegan. You know, the whole idea is to destroy the vegan movement, because the vegan movement is about liberation of animals and humans and all of us. And then the alternative is to eat insects, right? We have to get our protein from insects. And so this is another thing that's totally grotesque. And they're even talking about cannibalism. I mean, there's articles that have been written, you know, positively praising cannibalism as a way to fight global warming, as a way to fight world hunger. People are dying. Well, why not eat them? You know, I mean, might as well, you know. I mean, so we're being mocked. I mean, we have to understand, like when Paul says God is not mocked, but we do it anyway. We say, well, we're going to eat cows and pigs and chickens. We're going to mock this law, this of as you sow, so shall you reap. We end up having the same thing happening to us. And we're being looked at, why don't you eat insects? Why don't you eat other people? Why don't you eat this frankenfood, this these chemicals. We should really allow our natural wisdom to grow to the point where we see what food really is. Food, I mean, I'm so happy that Madeline and I have a little food forest now. We lived in an RV for 17 years just traveling, but now we have half an acre of land. We planted 76 fruit trees. We have six beds of raised vegetables. So we grow our own food. And it's beautiful. I mean, when you work and with the nature and with the land, you create a harmonious community of plants, and we get like 700 or 800 nectarines from one little tree. You know, the more love you put into a garden, the more love comes back. I mean, you just keep giving love, and more love comes. You build the soil, you build the microbial networks, you build the fungal networks, you just bring in the bees, and you create habitat for animals, and it just creates the sanctuary. It's a beautiful thing. We have so much food, we have to sell it at the farmer's market or whatever. So the whole idea is that's how we're meant to live. You give love. If you look at animal agriculture, it's the opposite. You're stealing their life, you're stealing their babies, you're stealing their purpose, they're in misery. It's all about violence, and it's all about waste. With a plant-based, you don't waste anything. All the compost goes back in, builds the soil. Everything builds. Everything creates more harmony. Everything creates more health. And the beautiful thing is we've discovered, the ancient people knew this, that when you take care of plants and you put your love and caring into the plants, they get to know you. They actually get to know us. And the foods become more medicinal than ever. And you get even more healthy than ever. We have to realize there's a tremendous amount of intelligence that's invested into the natural world and into plants. And they resonate. They understand, they learn to understand us. And the same thing with cows and pigs and chickens. They have tremendous intelligence invested into them. We just ignore that and kill them. So this destruction of their intelligence leads to the destruction of our intelligence. When we honor the intelligence of nature and animals, our intelligence increases. We have to understand these things and realize that our whole society has been just hijacked by animal agriculture into a path, an unnecessary path of violence and abuse, that really it's time for us to question it, because now our technology through this science is at the point where it can easily not only enslave animals, but it can easily enslave all of us. I mean, there's a technology in place now where you can have everybody on a digital currency, where if they say something you're not supposed to say, then you can cut off the ability to buy food. I mean, that's actually possible now. So we need to really understand that these ideas that you and I are talking about, these are not just abstract ideas. This is about the future of humanity, of our children, not only just our health, but these are critical issues that we are facing. And each one of us, I think really, each one of us is called to be as proactive as we can be, to understand the situation and to play our part, to be part of the solution, to move away from the ignorance and violence and deception of animal agriculture and of science-based materialism, and reconnect with spirituality and kindness and compassion and food that comes out of the earth with love, that the earth is here giving us, really. It's amazing. It's so beautiful.
Okay, there's a lot in that. Again, and I've written down a few things. I want to go back and cover a few of these things. It is so important that we wake up to what technology can be doing, and that we are stepping towards something that could very much look like real enslavement, just not the kind that we can still, like right now, we can still kind of have our lives and feel pretty good about it and everything. We could be moving through something that's much more dire. And I again, as a minister, it's really not my job to create dire messages, but I do think it's really important to be rooted into reality in order to transform your own self into creating something else. Otherwise, you're just living in la-la land. And it's important to see, you know, the wizard behind the curtain. I want to go back to your talking about how we steal, because something came to me when you talk about how we steal lives and we steal freedom, we steal purposes and all of that. And I know you were in the recent movie, Christspiracy. And I know in Christspiracy, they made a big deal about the translation that Jesus went into the temple and said, this is a den of thieves. And they said that that's not the accurate translation, that the accurate translation is a den of murderers. But for me, you know, I back it up. It's like, I don't need that other translation. Den of Thieves is good enough to me because that's the one thing, that the one thing that breaks natural law is theft, whether it's theft of property or theft of life or theft of words or, you know, everything that is a quote sin is rooted in thievery. And so to me, that was sufficient, that the temple was a den of thieves, robbing the animals of their lives, robbing people from being able to access God directly, robbing, you know, so much, you know, lying and everything. So anyway, that's something I wanted to bring up when you mentioned thievery.
Yeah.
So, and then I want to go into how can we restore our natural wisdom? Because I think like we're so cut off from it. I mean, we're so cut off from what is our natural wisdom? Most people don't have a sense even of their own intuitive nature anymore. And even when they pray, I don't think they're really opening themselves fully to the divine message. So I'd like to cover two things, at least remaining in our time. And that is, how do we restore our natural wisdom? How do we liberate our minds? And also, do we need to go into more of what the deception is so that people can see it more clearly? Or do you think that we've already covered enough about all of the deception? Because I'm not sure people know.
Well, okay. So no, I think we need to go into the deception a little bit more.
Yeah.
But also, I think your first question of how we can liberate our minds is very pressing. And the basic thing on that, I think, is to see that it's a two-step process. The first step is relatively simple and easy. And we can say, go vegan, right? I mean, just a better way to say it is to, you know, do the best we can to liberate animals, liberate all of us, to just do the best we can to bring our lives into alignment with kindness and compassion, to live this, to live a life of kindness and caring for other beings, to live a life of respect for other forms of life, for all forms of life, humans and non-human forms of life. So that is called vegan. But we don't need that word, just to move in that direction. And so that means, though, like to refrain from buying foods that come from, that are sourced from animals, clothing as much as possible, entertainment and other products as much as possible, things that are tested on animals, or, you know, even like for me, pharmaceutical products, they're all tested on animals. A lot of them have animal ingredients in them. So just to try to minimize violence that we cause to animals and slavery to humans, try to buy fair trade, try to just, since we're such consumers in our society, try to, as much as possible, make our consuming to reduce our footprint of violence. And then also in the way we talk and interact with each other. So that's step one. And that's a big deal. I mean, just to do that is quite a lot in our society. But that's not enough. We need to take the second step and then embody what we're talking about. Ahimsa is probably the best word, which means nonviolence, or in the Christian tradition, love, agape love, or love, you know, the pure love for all of life. And that requires us to meditate and to connect more deeply with the truth that we are. And so a lot of people, I think, do step one and don't do step two. A lot of people try to do step two, but they never do step one. They try to have a spiritual life, but they're still eating animals, or they stop eating animals, but they think, well, I hate religion, I hate spirituality, because they're all a bunch of meat eaters in the church. But we need to really embrace both of these. And that, I think, just touches on another thing I just want to touch on briefly, which is this, the three stages of veganism. Because when we learn about these ideas, we go, okay, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna become a vegan. And then we run right into a lot of difficulties. You know, it's not easy, because suddenly, how do I actually make meals that are nutritious and that I like, that are delicious? So we have to learn, we have to unlearn. And then we face people who doubt us, who reject us. And they say things like, well, if everybody went vegan, cows would take over the earth. So it's a stupid thing to do. Oh, I didn't think of that. No. You know, plants have feelings too, you know, all these different things, all these rationalizations and so forth. So the beginning stage of veganism is not easy. It's a lot to learn, a lot to unlearn, a lot to navigate. If we work our way through that, then we get to the second stage of veganism, which is also not very easy and is also quite painful. I mean, both of these stages are difficult. We're going against society. you know, it's daunting in many ways. It takes a lot of character, a lot of energy, and a willingness to be open. The second stage I call the angry vegan stage, because now we've been able to figure out how to make healthy, delicious meals. We know what to say to people when they say, well, you know, cows will take over the earth, or where do you get your protein, and all that stuff. But now we go around being angry all the time because we try to share this good news that we don't need to eat animals to be healthy, that eating animal foods is really causing a lot of suffering and disease and environmental devastation and everything else. It's unnecessary. And people say, well, you know, you're ridiculous. I like bacon. Leave me alone. And so we tend to become very often somewhat misanthropic. We think, well, I wish all the humans would just die, you know, get rid of the, have peace on earth without any humans, you know, all these kinds of things. So that second stage, a lot of people get stuck in that stage. A lot of people that call themselves vegans are kind of stuck in that stage. And that's why a lot of people say, oh, you vegans, you're, you know, you're ridiculous. You think you're right and you're all this. Some people avoid that stage, but don't go much farther through the, what I call the closet vegan stage, where we just say, I don't want to talk about it, you know. But the good news is that there is this third stage. And that's what I referred to earlier. When we do the second stage, the second step, which is the inner work. And so the third stage of veganism, I refer to that as deep veganism. And that's one of the reasons I wrote The World Peace Diet and also this new book, especially Food for Freedom. Because when we really make an effort to understand the bigger picture that we're talking about here of the history and the anthropology and the psychology and the spiritual dimension of all of this, and we see how we've been wounded and how other people have been wounded, then we lose the anger, which is like, oh, everybody's wounded. No point in being mad at them. You know, they're just, they've been harmed as little kids. Mm-hmm. From the time they were little kids, they were forced to eat animal food, just like I was. We understand the forces of, and we have 10,000 years of momentum. I mean, this massive amount of inertia that's just propelling every society. I mean, every institution in our society is molded by animal agriculture. They embody it. They embody the underlying narratives and the attitudes, everything, even the religions. So the whole idea is to have, we have a sense of compassion, a sense of understanding. We also have the sense of joy that, well, every day I can learn a little more and help and contribute and somehow be part of the solution. And that is a life well lived. If every day we can be part of the solution to the problems here, if we can contribute in some way to relieving the suffering of others, fantastic. I mean, we just have this overwhelming sense of happiness and joy, even though we know there's suffering. And so I think the idea is to balance our sense of grief at the suffering and the tragedy and the heartbreak of all that with this joyful sense that there, all around us, there is a beautiful earth and planet, and that we do have this underlying true nature of eternal spiritual consciousness that we share with everyone, that there's one life living through all of us, that we're all related, and that as we raise our vibration, we actually help everyone raise their vibration. As we make a conscious effort to understand the truth that we are and we embody that, then we help everyone to embody that. And so we can see that there are these dark institutions, but we don't have to be afraid of them, because what we are can never be harmed by them ultimately. It's like the sky is infinite and eternal and self-radiant. And no matter how many clouds are all covering it, the sky doesn't care. Those clouds are going to go. They're not going to harm the sky. The sky is way beyond that. That's us. We are the sky. All these things are clouds. We don't do ourselves justice when we are afraid of these clouds. We have to take back our power and remember always that we are infinite, eternal beings of consciousness, that we're never born and we'll never die. We're functioning through a vehicle. That's not what we are. What's waving my hand right now? What is it? It's not. There's something far greater. This is a tool. It's just a vehicle. And so we don't have to be afraid. We can actually question everything and work together to heal. It's about awakening and it's about healing these wounds and understanding that our consciousness can keep growing and we can keep evolving, but it does mean we have to let go of the tribal food, you know, and the tribal mentality that we were raised with that's based on violence. And the founders of unity and virtually all the great spiritual teachers, the Buddha, I think Jesus, you know, all these great spiritual teachings, they said that. They were telling us that. Mm-hmm. And it got covered over by these same forces. So it's time for us to reawaken and reconnect with those ideas.
Yeah, it got covered over. It's like it became too hard for some people, or there's a concern that, you know, we won't have enough followers if we tackle right. the topic of food. You know what, the three stages that you shared, you know what it reminds me of? It kind of reminds me a little bit about people awakening to like a new belief system, a new religion or something. Like, let's just take like somebody who's a born again Christian, you know, they experience this good news and they're real excited about it and they're going to try to live it. And then they go out and they're proselytized and it's like, but then it kind of turns into, you know, you guys are sinners and you're wrong and you're wrong and we have it right. You know, they go through that kind of mean vegan stage of fundamentalism. I think what you're talking about, this process also can go through that fundamentalism stage where we're right and you're wrong and you're bad. And ultimately we all have to come to unconditional love and love everyone, even when, you know, they're, for the Christians, even if they're not believers, for all of us, even if you're immersed in harming and succumbing to those attitudes that were taught to us, the might versus right and elitism and those kinds of things, still living in that, that we have some compassion for them because they just have not yet awakened. And not that I know I have not fully awakened. Your book caused me to awaken more than I was awakened before. So we're all in a process of awakening. And awakening is not easy. Mm-hmm. It's not the easy path. It is the spiritual path, but it's never, well, I have people comment on my YouTube channel saying, oh, it's really easy. It's like, I don't know what you're awakening to. Every time I awaken, it's hard. Or awakening from.
Yeah, that's a great question, but I think it ultimately it gets to the point where you think, well, it sure seemed hard, but it now it seems easy.
Right. Yeah. The process and it's going through those three stages you talk about. The process can be difficult.
But you're right. It's excruciating. It's really excruciating to come to terms with a lot of, and to let go of so much and to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not easy. No, you're totally right about that, I think.
Yeah. I do love what you say about we are the sky. And so these dark institutions, and I think you and I both would see that the medical, industrial, corporate, government, media, all of it has this dark aspects to it. Not to say that everybody in there is working for dark forces or for dark reasons, but there is kind of a cloud in many of our institutions that so many of us can't see. But when you see it, it's like, holy cow, look at this world that we're in. But to remind us that, you know, what are the powers that shouldn't be in this world? How much power do they have? You know, in Unity, we don't really talk about, quote, Satan or the devil or evil because it doesn't really have power. It's just absence of light. So, you know, what power do dark forces have? Really nothing. Only if we give it to them.
Well, that's true. The thing is, when we're born, we're wounded by these forces because they've become very intimately entwined in our family life, in our sexual life, in our religious life, in our education and everything. They've worked their way in. So I think that's the thing. You know, like if you look at the way birth is done on a dairy, you know, like a little baby cow is born in on a dairy, it's violent in the sense that as soon as the baby's born, the baby's taken away. It's like, I own you. I own your baby. I'm going to inject the baby now with a bunch of vaccines, a bunch of medications, because I want to use her for my, you know, profit. You know, so it's all about dominating and exploiting the offspring. And quite honestly, I think if you look carefully at the way birth is done in our society today, it mirrors what's done, the way it's done on the dairy. I mean, lot of violence that is in the birthing process of separation of the baby from the mother. I saw this video during the pandemic era where the hospital administrator was saying, well, as long as the baby, because the mother didn't want to have the baby have any medications or anything there. And the hospital administrator was saying, as long as the baby is inside you, it's your baby. But once the baby comes out, that's not your baby anymore. That's the that's exactly mirrors what, you know, on a dairy. So as little kids, we are wounded by chemicals. And it's well understood, for example, like most of the water in the United States is fluoridated. The studies show clearly that this toxic chemical, fluoride, it attacks our intelligence. It reduces the intelligence of human beings. And you know, we have whole armies of scientists who are working to reduce the intelligence of animals, because when you have animals that they just kind of sit there and they don't get frustrated and bang their head against the bars because they can't move, or peck each other's eyes out because they're all crowded, when they just kind of sit there completely unintelligent because that's, they've been bred that way and they've been drugged that way, that's good for business. That's more profitable. So we have to understand that if we're going to insist on going to the store and paying for meat, dairy, and eggs that come from animals who have been dumbed down so they'll be more profitable, we shouldn't be surprised that our own children are being dumbed down so they'll be more profitable for the same forces.
Yeah.
Because it's the bankers that own all these corporations. I mean, if you look at BlackRock and these gigantic asset holding companies, they own the pharmaceutical industries, they own the meat and dairy industries, they own the media industries, they own the entertainment industries, they own the universities, they own the governmental agencies, they own everything. And so what profits them, everything's interconnected. They make more money when more chemicals are sprayed on the fields because they make money on chemicals. They make more money when people eat those products and get cancer because they make the pharmaceuticals for the cancer epidemic. And they make more money when there's a war because they own the companies that make bombers and all the weapons manufacturers. So the whole idea is that the same people make money on all these things that cause suffering to animals and to us. We should be proactive and not comply with those, right? We should not be eating the foods that cause that suffering to those animals. We should not be putting our children in harm's way and having them be injected with poisons or drinking poisons or eating poisons, because poisons can be used, as they're used in animal agriculture, to manipulate and dominate and exploit living beings, animals or human beings. So we have to see, why is it that all these, like Harvard and all these universities, come out with these articles all the time saying that organic produce isn't any better, really? And saying that, oh, if you're overweight, it has nothing to do with what you're eating. It's just genetic. I mean, of course, the universities are bought and owned by the same powers. They want us to have no power, to have no control, to not take responsibility for the quality of our food, to not take responsibility for the quality of our health, to not take responsibility for the quality of our spirituality and relationships. They want us to just listen to them, take their drugs, eat their poisons, and have no power, because that's how they increase their money and power. And this is not, it's satanic in the sense that if you go to the Church of Satanism, which I never did, but my wife did once, she said, I was curious. I went there, and all they basically said was, you know, just do your life and get what you want. You know, it's really not evil. It's like everyone deserves to have the life that they want to have. You know, you deserve that. It seems, you know, pretty good, pretty nice. But the thing is, it's like, what makes it satanic is you know, how you harm others, it really doesn't matter that much. And so that's the key thing. And so you have to understand that with animal agriculture, that's what we do. I mean, by the millions of times every day, we say, well, it just tastes so good. You know, I love the bird. I love the taste of a chicken, whatever, breast. Yeah. I mean, we're getting our pleasure from the suffering of others. That's satanic. I mean, that is diabolical. That's the essence of it. So we're raised in a society where we're wounded into being satanic in what we're doing. And we shouldn't be surprised when there's beings that are doing that to us. They're treating us in a satanic way, that are just saying, well, you know, we're going to make money on your sickness. That's what they do. They make money on our sickness. So we shouldn't cooperate with that. We should stop the violence that we're doing, but also not be a victim. We should not be gullible. The worst problem we have today in our society is toxic gullibility. We just learn to trust authorities and go along and not question the narratives. So if we're really aligned, we're not easily fooled. If we're not honest, we're very easily fooled. If we're deceptive and deceiving others, we're very easily fooled ourselves. And I think that's what we see happening. I was amazed how easily deceived everybody was. And remember what William Casey said he said it way back in like 1980s in President Reagan, when he was the head of the CIA, he said, "We will know that our disinformation program is working well when everything that the American public believes is false." And so that's the goal. That was the goal then, and it's still a goal now, of the intelligence community, is that everything we think is true is false. And I think it's been pretty much, they've succeeded. I mean, everything we think about medicine, everything we think about food, everything we think about government, everything we think about education, it's not true. I mean, really, everything we think about, almost virtually everything, has been manipulated to the point where we are being enslaved by deception. And like you said earlier, I love what you said, how all of the evils, in a sense, come back to stealing, right? You're stealing their freedom. You're stealing their life. You're stealing. And deception is an interesting one because you're stealing the truth. But deception is interesting because with the other types of violence, typically people know they've been harmed. Like if someone comes in and steals my bicycle, like, "Oh, my bicycle's gone. You know, I know I've been harmed," or if they harm me in some way. But with deception, people don't even know. That's the thing. You can deceive people and steal their money and steal their lives, steal their freedom, steal everything. And they still think, "Wow, you're my friend. You're good." They have no idea.
Right.
That's why deception is the most dangerous and most serious of all violence, because the person has no idea. And so we have to be on guard about this because we live in an empire of lies. Deception is everywhere. And we are called spiritually to not be deceivable, to see through the delusion and understand the truth. And that's the most important thing that we can do, is to stand porter at the gate of our thoughts and discriminate truth from error. It's not easy, but the more we can do that, I'm so grateful for you, Reverend Carol, for creating this forum where we can actually make an effort to discriminate the false from the true.
Yeah, it is, to me, it is discernment, like spiritual discernment is what is really up for us, to discern truth from falsehood. It is it can be so difficult if you really aren't tuned into the depth of your being. And to me, that is our avenue out of this. You know, once you see kind of the cage that's being constructed around us, which many people can't see. Most people in my life can't see. Many people in my life can see. But when you see it, it's like, oh my, what agency do I have now? Well, to me, the most important thing is to hone that gift of discernment. It's one of the powers that is God-given, to discern truth from falsehood. Mm-hmm. Because you're right, we live in an inverted world, and it's getting more and more inverted. So to just really, the other thing about deception is nobody wants to believe that they've ever been deceived.
Right.
It's so interesting. It's such a skill for people who are deceivers, because you're able to take advantage of that part of humanity that just never wants to think that they've been fooled. And I used to be that way. Now I'm kind of like, I kind of enjoy looking back at all the things that I was fooled by. I've been fooled by so much, and I'm okay going, I was fooled by that. I was fooled by that. I was fooled by that. And there's things going on now that I'm sure I'm fooled by. But to be vigilant and to kind of question, am I being deceived? It's a worthwhile endeavor.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a never ending. And when you look at the lives of the great spiritual sages, they all went through that. They being deceived, being tempted by the great deceiver. You know, that's the thing.
Jesus in the wilderness. That's what that whole thing, the 40 days in the wilderness, that's what that was. It wasn't the you know, actual concrete story of it. It was like really, really testing myself and looking at how can I be deceived and how can I discern truth from falsehood. And only then could he go into his ministry and really be the light that he was on the planet. And so really, I think that's that hero's journey that we're all being called to go through, to go into our wilderness and test ourselves in that way. I really like that you brought that up. Okay. All right. Well, there's so much more that we can talk about. I think what I'd like to end with is let's end with remembering what humanity's purpose is and how we've been deceived into believing that our purpose is material, that we're here to exploit, that we're here to gather riches and fame and all these things. And that's a deception. So why don't you share what you believe humanity's purpose is?
Well, I know we're at the end of our time. I think just briefly, we're taught that our purpose, really, I think at a very deep level, we're taught our purpose is to consume, essentially. I mean, that message is so powerful, either materially or experientially, you know, consume experiences. And the people that we venerate the most, who have the most power and the most prestige, are those who consume the most, who have the most wealth and conspicuously consume. And so this, I think, is, again, the inversion of animal agriculture, where we're consuming violence. And so we become fixated on consuming. But I think when we really look deeply into that question, and it's not an easy one. I remember when I go to universities and I talk to college students and I say, what do you think your purpose is? And they all have this kind of blank look on their face, like they never thought of that, asking that question. But it's pretty obvious that it's just to consume. That's what they say. Well, it's to get rich, you know, and make money so I can have things. And what is humanity's purpose? I just love that. And I think a lot of it comes down to this capacity that we have for spiritual understanding and wisdom and communing with life and savoring life. And these animals of the earth that are around us, you know, it's so funny how we look into outer space and we wonder if maybe there's any other intelligent life forms out there somewhere. And all around us, there are beings with enormous intelligence and with incredible capacities, and perhaps with tremendous gifts that we just ignore them. Like, they're just objects that we buy and sell and eat, or they're pests that we want to kill them and get rid of them. So I think to begin to explore the other beings, ourselves and animals and creativity, music and art and writing and poetry and architecture and design. I mean, there's so many things to express, but all of that comes out of spirituality. I mean, spirituality is the only way forward. Most people, I think, actually, when you ask them what is the way to a positive future, they'll say technology. You know, our technology will figure out a way to solve world hunger, figure out a way to get a cure for cancer. Our technology is the way. That is pure nonsense. Technology will never last cows and pigs and chickens what it's done for them. It'll do the same thing, right? No, spirituality is the way forward. And it's our spiritual wisdom that creates a positive world and a beautiful world. And that's something each one of us can cultivate and develop. And then we'll know how to the pathway to this beckoning world that's waiting for us, a beautiful world that is available all the time. The earth is absolutely abundant and beautiful and can support all of us easily. It's just a matter of us living in harmony with the natural laws that are here.
Yeah, and remembering who we are. Yeah. Well, that's a great, great message of hope to end on, Will. And I'll hold up your book again since you don't have it, Food for Freedom, and we'll have links to your book. Do you want to share just really quickly how people will get in touch with you?
Sure. The best way probably is through our website, either my name, willtuttle.com, or worldpeacediet.com, or now we have a new one, foodforfreedom.net. Those are the three main websites. The World Peace Diet website really is the big one, has everything, but they all interconnect with each other. So any of those things, we'd be happy to stay in touch. We have trainings and we have essays and we have music and art and books and all these things.
Yeah, and I read lots of books for my podcast. I do really highly recommend this book because it just makes those connections. And it really, really brought home to me this world of deception and just awakening out of that. And you know, and I went in knowing a lot, but it went really deep for me. So I appreciate it very, very much. So thank you so much for joining me, Will. And I want to thank all my listeners who have been with us for these last two sessions, and get the book and let's wake up together.
Thank you so much, Reverend Carol. Thank you, everyone. Go forth and multiply the message. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. And I now close the Spiritual Forum. Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, you can let me know by leaving a positive rating and review on your favorite podcast app, or make a tax-deductible donation at thespiritualforum.org. The Spiritual Forum is a podcast, prayer, and retreat ministry affiliated with Unity Worldwide Ministries. Thank you again for being a part of the Spiritual Forum community. And remember, you are an amazing, divine, and powerful being.